Is it Shane?
Yes, this is Shane.
Okay, great.
Hi, everyone. My name is Shane, and I have to admit, I'm not really here to talk to you about books. I'm here to talk to you about rebellion. What's the first thing that pops into your mind when I say the word rebel? Do you think of some slouchy, red-jacketed James Dean type? Or maybe you think of some kid who pulls the fire alarm right before some pep rally or something. Or maybe a rebel is just somebody really cool who goes against the grain all the time. Well, did you ever think that rebel might be a term that describes you? If you might be a rebel, you might like reading science fiction or sci-fi, because the characters in the books I'm going to talk about put James Dean to shame. Take Green, for instance. Green is 15 years old. She just chopped off all her long black hair, started sewing thorns onto her clothes, and pounding nails through the soles of her boots. She's even started to give herself tattoos of these bats and ravens with a needle and her dad's jar of black ink. And she's not doing all these things for the reasons you might think she is. Because the apocalypse just happened, and Green's left to pick up the pieces, and Alice Hoffman's Green Angel. Okay. So maybe it's a little bit hard to imagine what it would be like to lose your entire family like Green did. That's pretty extreme. But maybe it's easier to imagine what it would feel like to have just one member of your family MIA. That's just what happens to Meg Murray. Her dad has suddenly gone missing, and nobody knows where he is. Now Meg has to chase him to an alternate reality, a really bizarre one, where the kids all skip rope to the exact same rhythm, and all the houses and lawns and even the people look exactly alike. It's just like that movie The Stepford Wives. And everyone's terrified to take a step out of place. Maybe Meg's doomed to conform, or maybe she finds a way to escape. In Madeline Lingle's A Wrinkle in Time. Sometimes you're a rebel because you stand up to someone else. Now, you've heard about nuclear war before, probably, like the atomic bomb. And sometimes that seems like something that could happen any day, and sometimes like something that could never happen. Well, let's just pretend that it has happened, and that you are the only person who survived the blast. Somehow, for some weird reason you don't understand, the radiation hasn't affected you, or the area your house is in, or the water or food supply. So you can live for a long time, right? But you're totally, completely alone. Then one day, you see movement on the horizon. And you want it to be somebody, anybody, just so you won't be alone anymore. But what you don't know is that there are worse things than being alone. In Robert C. O'Brien's Z for Zachariah. So sometimes you're better off being alone rather than with somebody you know absolutely nothing about. For instance, probably some adult in your life has, at one point or another, warned you not to hitchhike. And that's probably a pretty smart idea, right? Because that stranger you get a lift from just might be a lunatic or an axe murderer or something. But what if you find out that Earth's about to be blasted to smithereens by an alien race just to make way for a new galactic expressway, and that your only hope of escape is to thumb a ride with a passing spaceship? You've just got to avoid freaking out long enough to help rewrite time and save not only Earth, but the whole universe. Crazy as it sounds, that's exactly what happens to Arthur Dent in Douglas Adams' The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and one of its follow-up books, Life, the Universe, and Everything. Sometimes people don't start out being rebels. They become rebels after something incredible happens to them. For instance, what would you do if you were minding your own business and living a totally average life, complete with a boring school day, a mom who's constantly on your case, and sisters who live to annoy? When all of a sudden, the government starts sending officials to your house to brainwash you, would you give in or run? Well, that's the dilemma Freck Huggins faces in Rudy Rucker's Freck and the Elixir. Maybe you've thought before about how cool it would be to be as smooth as a secret agent, like James Bond or like Sidney Bristow on that show Alias. Well, Philip Lynx, a.k.a. Flinx, is living that dream. In fact, Flinks has spent so much time jet-setting around the galaxy that he's ordered to go on a vacation to a remote planet. The only thing Flinks doesn't know is that he's headed right for the middle of a ticking time bomb. Well, that's my book talk for this evening. Thanks for listening. And remember, the next time you pass by the sci-fi shelf, give it a second glance because you might just discover a rebel that looks familiar.
Great. Good job. Thanks. Jennifer Allen, if you're out there, could you go ahead and give us a call? Or we can go ahead and start the group from 7:45. Lisa, Sharon, Patricia, and Tricia. Takes a minute or two for them to dial in. Then we can wrap up just a little bit early this evening. Get the crew out of here since they've been here since around 5 o'clock. Makes a long day for them. Okay, the light's flashing, which means we got a phone call. Okay, who am I talking to?
This is Jennifer.
Jennifer, okay.
Hi.
You want to go ahead and do your book talk for us, please?
Sure will. All the books I'll be book talking are titles nominated for the Illinois Abraham Lincoln Award for 2006. It's an award sponsored by the Illinois School Library Media Association, and this award is in its third year. Number one, any sexual activity is a secret. No public displays of affection. No air kisses blown across the cafeteria. Number two, don't discuss your weight with him. Let's face it, you both know it's there. So don't start bemoaning your body or pressuring him into lying about it. Number three, go further than skinny girls. If you can't sell them on your body, you'd better overcompensate with some sexual perks. How does a normal person survive in a family of perfect people? Overweight, insecure, 15-year-old Virginia Shreves asks herself that question on a regular basis and makes lists and rules to help her survive being the black sheep of the family. Perfection goes out the window, though, when her attractive, athletic older brother is convicted of date rape, and the family must start to deal with what's really happening and has to drop the perfection persona. Earth, My Butt, and Other Round Things by Carolyn Mackler. How would you react if a new girl showed up at school, dressed in old-fashioned wedding dress, carrying a ukulele, and passing out flowers? The students of Micah High School don't know what to do with her, but they soon fall under the spell of Stargirl, especially Leo. But can someone so eccentric change the way an entire high school behaves? Or will they all teach Stargirl to conform and become one of them? Stargirl by Jerry Spinelli. One decision. One decision can change your life. Really, it's just one decision to do nothing. Amir, the son of a wealthy Afghani businessman, changes both his life and the life of his best friend, Hassan, when he chooses to walk away as Hassan is abused and raped by the local bully. That one moment defines the rest of Amir's life as he first tries to escape his decision and then later tries to atone for it. Kite Runner by Khalid Hosani. Zach is caught. Caught between the voices in his head, caught between the two gunmen at the restaurant, caught between the rest of the hostages who just hope he'll shut up before they all get shot, and caught between life and death now that he's off his schizophrenic medicine and just can't stop the voices from telling him to talk and try and talk the gunmen in the restaurant out of what they're doing. Inside Out by Terry Truman. I'm done. No more. No more surgeries. No more transfusions. No more choosing to keep Kate healthy by hurting me. That's what 13-year-old Anna says to her family when she's once again asked to help her older sister, who is stricken with leukemia. Anna was brought into the world to be a donor for her sister, someone with the same blood type, DNA, basically a spare parts donor, and she's tired of the whole thing. When Kate needs a kidney, Anna decides she's ready to start living for herself and hires a lawyer to stop her parents from making her have the transplant. But how can a family survive while trying to choose one child's life over another? My Sister's Keeper by Jodi Picoult. Death. It doesn't have to be boring. That's the idea behind the book Stiff, The Curious Life of Human Cadavers. And with chapters like A Head is a Terrible Thing to Waste and The Cadaver Who Joined the Army, you may have trouble getting this title out of your own head. Warning, though, the gross-out factor is extremely high. There's actually a recipe for mellified man, which is basically human cadaver, honey, and fermentation for 100 years. This was used as medicine, actually sometimes even taken orally, in 12th century Arabia. The gross-out factor's high, but it's basically an interesting look in what a dead body can be used for. Inventions, safety features, basically, how can a dead body benefit others? Thanks.
Okay, I think we're ready for the next group. Do we have somebody ready?
This is Lisa.
Lisa?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm trying to find my place on my list.
Okay.
It's a long list.
Yeah, it is. I had to mark it off as we go.
Okay. Ready, set, go.
Okay. Is it ever okay to break a promise? Maddie promised her dying mother that she would stay with the family and take care of her younger sisters. But now she's 16, and Maddie wants to continue her education. She wants to become a writer and leave the farm. Then again, does she really want to leave? Her friends and family all live here. And what about that good-looking neighbor boy? Royal Loomis keeps giving her special attention, and she likes it. Maddie wants to keep her promise to her mother, but she also wants to live her own life. She is torn between obligation and desire in A Northern Light by Jennifer Donnelly. The rules. If she hollers, she is mine. If she needs to be changed, she is always mine. In the dictionary next to sitter, there is not a picture of grandma. It's time to grow up. Too late, you're out of time. Be a grown-up. In The First Part Last by Angela Johnson, Bobby is 16 years old. He lives in New York City, and he's raising his newborn daughter by himself. Bobby finds out how hard it is to balance school, friends, and a baby. He quickly learns that his easy life of pizza, hoops, and just hanging out are over. He and Nia plan to give the baby up for adoption, but things changed. Now he's got a tiny little girl counting on him for everything. Jed's a popular junior in high school. He's got a great car, and his friends think his parents are cool. He's even dating the prettiest girl in school, who happens to be a senior. Then he gets approached by a strange girl with pink hair named Gertrude. Gertrude tells Jed that his father is sleeping with her mother. You'll like Claws by Will Weaver if you like mysteries, romance, or even action-adventure movies. The story gets exciting in the very first chapter and keeps you turning the pages. What if the love of your life is forced by his parents to travel to Rome, Italy, over the summer, the last summer you are going to have together before he leaves for college on the East Coast, and you will be stuck in Iowa for the summer, thinking about him, jealous of him, and hating his parents for doing this to you on purpose? Then you get an offer that is so hard to resist, traveling the West for the entire summer with the cousins you haven't seen in years, but if you remember correctly, are perfect monsters. Add to that, they just lost their father in a freak accident, and their mother has no idea how to handle them, so she wants you to come help everyone get along. Who would turn that offer down? This book is about Robin, who ends up taking that zigzag trip across the West. They don't make it all the way to Los Angeles, but I won't tell you what happens. You'll just have to read Zigzag by E. Whitlinger. The stands are full at the Rainier Beach High ball field. Shane has been called to the mound to save the game. Rainier Beach High is playing Southridge, a private school with rich kids and a state-of-the-art ball stadium. Shane used to be on that team. He used to be one of the rich kids, living in a big house, going to a private school with lots of friends. Now he is on the inner city school team. It seems like years since his dad was arrested right out of the stands during one of Shane's ball games. Was it really just 2 months ago? Mom lost the house, and now Shane is one of those inner city kids he used to make fun of. Now Reese Robertson is up to bat. Reese, whose family moved into Shane's old house, Reese, who is now the star hitter on Shane's old team. Shane rears back and fires the ball harder than any ball he's ever thrown in his life. Only he doesn't throw it outside to meet the catcher's glove. He throws it inside, up and in, high heat. Was it an accident? Shane is sure he didn't hit Reese on purpose. Will Shane ever get up the nerve to pitch again? Will Reese be able to make a comeback and face another pitcher? Maybe if they work together. In High Heat by Carl Duker. They call it Keisha's house, but it's not really hers. The house belongs to Joe. Kids go there when they've got trouble, when life at home gets too rough or the whole world feels too heavy. Steffi is pregnant. Harris's parents won't accept that he's gay. Katie's stepfather abuses her. Carmen drinks too much. Dante can't stand his foster parents. Even Keisha has her reasons for leaving her own home. Now they've got a chance to sort out their problems and a place to stay. Keisha's House by Helen Frost. Opening chapter. 9-year-old Evan Barrett hears his parents' voices for the last time on a ship-to-shore radio as they are lost at sea. He believes they are swallowed up by the She, a legendary dark force that is said to prey on ships along the New Jersey coast. Fast forward to Evan at 17. He is popular and level-headed. He has come to terms with his parents' death and has suppressed memories of the strange sounds he heard on the night of their disappearance. But then Evan starts having flashbacks. His world is turned upside down as he struggles to discover the truth. Has everything he has believed for 8 years been a lie? In The She by Carol Plumucci. Are you fascinated by codes, hidden meanings, and secret rituals? In The Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown, or The Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown, is based on thousands of years of codes and hidden meanings that have been hidden within artwork, writings, and architecture throughout the world by well-known artists from every walk of life. The truth behind these hidden codes was to be made known to the public by the millennium. Why did the millennium pass with no great announcement being made? Who exactly are the keepers of this big secret? You'll find out when you follow Robert Langdon as he is awoken from his hotel room in Paris and taken to the Louvre, the most well-known art museum in the world, in case you did not know. There he finds a man who has apparently been murdered, but who, before he died, arranged himself in such a way that the judicial police want to see if Mr. Langdon can decipher the message the dead man apparently wanted to send. Mr. Langdon and the deceased man's granddaughter, Sophie, who is also a cryptographer for the French police, set out to find out what her grandfather meant to say in his final message. They are in trouble, however, because Mr. Langdon has been implicated in the murder, and Sophie encourages Mr. Langdon to leave the scene of the crime with her to begin their search for answers. You will not want to put this book down until you find out what happens to Langdon and Sophie and what the Da Vinci Code means. A beautiful elven lady finds herself surrounded by a ring of fire, horned monsters, and a shade, an evil too awful to describe. Yet she remains calm, knowing she is the only hope to save the precious stone she holds close to her heart. In a flash of emerald light, she lies limp on the ground, but she has succeeded in transporting the stone away from the present danger. Minutes later, while hunting in the forest, Aragon, a boy of only 15 and unknown lineage, finds a mysterious stone. Only it's not really a stone, but a dragon's egg. Instantly, Aragon's simple life is over. Now he and his fledgling dragon, Sapphira, find themselves in the middle of the fight against an evil that knows no bounds. Can Aragon live up to the legend of previous ranks of dragon riders? Freaky Green Eyes by Joyce Carol Oates. Freaky Green Eyes came into Frankie's heart a few weeks after her 14th birthday. Freaky is Frankie's inner self. Freaky seems to have eyes that see situations more clearly. She's the little voice inside of Frankie's head. When Frankie's parents separate, she has no trouble deciding whose side she should be on. After all, her mother is the one who chose to leave, not her high-profile celebrity dad. Frankie turns against her mother, but Freaky Green Eyes keeps telling Frankie that something is just not right. When her mother is suddenly reported missing, Frankie believes her mom is simply pulling a disappearing act and has deserted their family for good. But Freaky Green Eyes knows that something is wrong. Freaky Green Eyes tries to convince Frankie that she has the strength to face the truth, no matter how terrible. Letter to the Wayne High School Board. We, the members of Mr. Duffy's After School Counseling Group, want to thank Mr. Duffy and Wayne High School for giving us a second chance. We ask that Wayne High continue Mr. Duffy's program next year. Here are the reasons why. Mr. Duffy's class is good. It's cool how people talk. I think Mr. Duffy's class should go on. He let us talk and stayed out of our way. More schools should be like this. Mr. Duffy's class made me want to be a better person. I might have disappeared without this class. Me too. Susan would have disappeared without Mr. Duffy's class. Even though it's hard to imagine someone her size disappearing, Susan's mom died last year. Her football coach dad ignores her. Her brother teases her along with the rest of the school. Susan had no one to talk to. Then she broke the rules and had a choice between being suspended or attending Mr. Duffy's after-school counseling class. What she's learned changed her life. In Alt Ed by Katherine Atkins. Have you seen Pirates of the Caribbean? That movie was set back a couple of centuries ago, but there's still all kinds of piracy going on in the Caribbean today. Outside of the intercoastal waters, there's yacht theft, treasure theft, murder, drug trafficking, and the occasional psychopath, among other things. The book Deep by Susan Vance is set in this place. Actually, it starts out with a girl in Seattle who's an only child and the apple of her parents' eye, but she ends up deep in the dangerous territory of the Caribbean. The book Amaryllis by Craig Christ Evans takes place during the Vietnam War era. I know lots of you have heard the music from this time, the 60s and early 70s. Some of you even like it. I've seen the t-shirts. The main character of this book, Jimmy, is 15 years old, and his brother Frank is doing combat duty in Vietnam. I don't know if you know anyone who served in Vietnam, but I've heard it said that Vietnam veterans don't talk much about their experience there. Jimmy's brother Frank sends letters home to their parents with the usual, "Hi, Mom, I'm fine, how are you?" In his letters to Jimmy, however, he doesn't hold back. He tells Jimmy how it really is. This is a great book to read if you are interested in this time period, because it gives you a good picture of what it was like. Plus, you'll get wrapped up in the story of someone who wants their brother to come home alive. What would you do if your dad was abusive, both verbally and physically, when he drinks, which is all the time? Your mother deals with it by taking medication that keeps her zoned out or asleep. What would you do? Leave home, maybe? But what if you had a 6-year-old brother? There really doesn't seem to be any perfect solution. The way the teenager in Bottled Up by Jay Murray handles it is by getting high all the time. Eventually, this catches up with him, and he has to find another way for himself and his brother. In 1955, 13-year-old Emmett Till lived in Chicago. Life was good for Emmett. He had a mother who loved him, he had lots of friends who loved him for his outlandish sense of humor, and he lived in an area where he didn't have to witness a great deal of racial prejudice. That same year, he went to Mississippi to spend his summer vacation with relatives. During his visit, he made the mistake of whistling at a woman. This probably would have been laughed off if he'd been in Chicago, but he was in Mississippi and the woman was white. Two nights later, he was dragged out of his uncle's home in the middle of the night, tortured for hours, and then shot in the head. His body was found a couple of days later in a stream. In Getting Away with Murder by Chris Crow, which is a true story, published in 2003, Emmett Till's story is told exceptionally well in just over 100 pages with photographs, documents, and eyewitness accounts. Just a year after its publication, the U.S. Justice Department decided to reopen the case of Emmett Till's murder. That's it.
Much.
Phew. Thank you.
You survived it. It's all over. Okay. Let's see if we can get one more in before we break. If either of any of the following, Terza, I don't know if you're home yet or not. Terza's in Colorado, and so she asked for a later time because she wouldn't be home from work yet. Ann Wolf, Sherry Remington, Jennifer Milliken, and Julie Schwartz. If one of those individuals could go ahead and call us now rather than waiting until after the break, we can move along just a little bit faster. And there goes the light. Okay, and who are we talking to?
Hi, it's Terja.
Great.
I did just get home, so I haven't been listening to how people have begun. Is there something I need to say before I just start?
Nope,
or?
You just start.
All right.
Really easy and upfront.
Sorry?
It's very easy and upfront. You just start.
All right. Well, I'm going to keep an eye on the time, too. My book talk tonight is Adventure Stories for Boys, Teen Boys. Are you the adventurous type? Do you actually find yourself wishing sometimes, in the midst of days and days of school, soccer practice, guitar lessons, trips to Taco Bell, stuff like that, that something really extraordinary would happen to you? Like, what if one day you were out on a hike and you stumbled into a beam of light that transported you into what seems to be another world? Well, you might react like Mark, the hero of Gary Paulsen's adventure novel, The Transall Saga. See, Mark is on a solo camping trip in the desert when he stumbles into such a beam of light like I mentioned. Next thing he knows, he wakes up not in the desert at all, but in a jungle with red leaves and red grass, a place that's not like the earth he's always known. He has to adapt real fast, because not adapting will mean getting gored by one of the strange beasts he runs into, or starving to death, or breaking a leg and dying slowly and painfully. Well, Mark manages to adapt to the jungle, but to find out what happens when he meets human-like creatures, and to find out whether he ever finds the light to take him home again, you'll have to read this short, fast-paced book on your own. Well, if that's a little too out of the ordinary for you, but you're still looking for adventure, you might pick up John Marsden's Tomorrow When the War Began. This time, the action takes place slightly closer to home, in the Australian bush, with heroes in their teens who also fall into adventure on a camping trip. Unlike Mark, they make it home, but their families have been taken captive by foreign invaders. Their farms and homes are deserted. So they do what any red-blooded, freedom-loving bunch of young people would do. They turn vigilante and wage guerrilla war on the people who have imprisoned their parents, siblings, and friends. Now, if Australia is still too far away, and if a foreign invasion of it sounds too unlikely, you might pick up a Western instead. Now, I'm not talking about your cheesy Louis L'Amour kind of Western. I'm talking about Gabriel's Story by David Anthony Durham. It's about Gabriel, an African-American guy in the late 1800s, who at 15 is moved from urban Baltimore to a sod hut in Kansas to help his new stepfather carve out a living from the tough earth. Gabriel isn't too happy about this situation, would you be? So he and his friend James run away for Texas with a group of men who promise to turn them into cowboys. The trip turns into a nightmare when Marshall, the group's insane leader, takes a detour for revenge. Now, this story is violent, not for the faint of heart. There's murder and other heinous crime committed against women and men alike. But there's also a great story to be had when Gabriel takes his fate into his own hands after witnessing the terrible things one human being can do to another. Now, all the books I've talked about so far are fiction. Good fiction, but I realize some of you guys prefer true stories. So for you, I offer Aaron Ralston's Between a Rock and a Hard Place. Some of you may have heard of Aaron already. A young guy in his 20s, he's appeared on Letterman and CNN, among other places. Why? Because on a solo hiking trip, he made a decision that the rest of us can only hope we'd have the courage to make. He's gotten his lower right arm trapped under a huge boulder. The hope of rescue is slim. He's in a remote part of a twisty system of Utah canyons, and he's been stuck like this for 4 days. He's running out of food and water, so what does he do? He takes his dull pocket knife, and he amputates his own arm. After that, he hikes out with his bloody stump, dehydrated, disoriented, but alive. Now, Aaron's story has a happy ending. TV appearances, a best-selling book. He's climbing mountains again now with a really cool prosthetic arm. But not all adventures end well, even when you walk out alive. Which brings me to the last book on my list, John Krakauer's Into Thin Air. Krakauer has been a writer for Outside Magazine. He's no stranger to tough situations in the outdoors. But even he would be the first to say that deciding to climb Mount Everest in May of 1996 may not have been the happiest choice of his life. You see, that was the year that 9 people died trying to get up the mighty peak and back down. Krakauer's book has it all. The way your body and mind deteriorate in the oxygen-poor air of the world's highest place. The bodies, yes, dead bodies you see on your way up and again on the way back down. The guilt and the pain that you feel when you survive while others die. Krakauer can say he's summited Everest, but at what price? This book is longer than the others I've described, but it's also more harrowing, riveting for the questions it asks and cannot always answer. Even if you want to climb a dangerous mountain yourself someday, you'll find yourself asking when you finish this book, how strong am I really?